come to a point in the agenda where it's an opportunity, we have an opportunity to hear a report from the Commission for the Blind and Visually Handicapped. So here to bring that report to you today is Associate Commissioner Brian Daniels.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you, Carl. I have to say, I was a little surprised. I came in, I guess, maybe the last 5 or 10 minutes, and I was surprised to hear, CEO of the NAACP. I thought you were Jewish. How about the United Jewish Appeal? Again, good afternoon, everybody. I'm very pleased to be here. And I would only like to just talk for a minute or two and then have an opportunity to open it up for dialogue, open it up for questions. I look forward to a good discussion today, and certainly want to hear your views and your input and share yours with mine. It's been a while since we've had an opportunity to dialogue, and I think it's always an important time to do so, and certainly today is included. I would like to extend heartfelt congratulations to several people in this room who have recently received appointment to the CBVH Executive Board. And I want to offer congratulations to you, Mindy, to David, to Julie, to Maria, if she's in here now, or Maria. To Karina, is Karina here? Okay, Karina. And to one of the board's co-chairs, Charlie Richardson. I also see Tom Robertson out in the back too, and our congratulations to Tom. And I see Luis Mendez here today too. And once again, I have that opportunity to extend to you that congratulations. And also, of course, to Mindy, who continues to serve on our State Rehabilitation Council, and Ray Wayne, who I don't see here today. Oh, that's too bad. Okay. And Ray as well, who continues, both of whom continue to serve dutifully on our State Rehabilitation Council. Now, in this partnership we have in CBVH, a partnership that includes myself and Peter Crowley, I understand that Peter spoke to everyone this morning, and he's the funny one among the two of us. So I'm not sure if I'm going to have you in stitches. Like I understand that Peter had you this morning, but I'll give it a shot anyway. And you know, speaking of Peter, Peter is not just the assistant commissioner of CBVH. No, Peter is a friend. Peter is not just a friend to me, but he's a friend to many people. He's a friend to our system. He's a friend to the network. He's a friend to the Business Enterprise Program, which was always a proud part of CBVH, and under his leadership is also attaining very new and significant heights. But of course, Peter would also be quick to point out that it's because of the extraordinary support that he has from the State Committee of Blind Vendors. And your portfolio is growing, Charlie. Also, of course, as the chair of our State Committee of Blind Vendors. And I believe in all my heart, and I think that you'll hear this too from the State Committee, that the destiny of this program is in the hands of our State Committee. And I think that that's a credit to you, Charlie, and certainly that's a credit to you, Peter Crowley, too. I'm very grateful to you, Peter, for your advice. And you know as well as I do, you're always the first one I turn to now at CBVH when I need to hear an opinion, a thought, and I know I can always rely on you to be honest. And thank you for your partnership, Peter. I'm going to open it up. I think that there's a lot of good things to say, to talk about. I certainly, as I said, I want to hear from you, and I'd like to take the next 20, 25 minutes or so, or however much time I might have, okay, to establish this dialogue and to, okay, so I open it up.
Okay,
Okay, I've heard Winning and Bamrick. Okay, Winning, Bamrick, and Rink. Don't make me remember more than three at one time. We will do this for as long as we need to. So, Winning.
Good afternoon, Commissioner.
Good afternoon, Harold.
Just recently, I received a letter from you stating that the Business Enterprise Program representative was not going to serve on the State Rehabilitation Council anymore. You mentioned the fact that due to budgetary situations, you reduced the committee from 23 to 15 people. Now, in that 15 people in the committee, there was four positions for business. Now, my question is, being that the BEP program is a business enterprise program, why wasn't the business enterprise program included in that at least one of those four positions, than just eliminating it altogether? Being that it's a commission, a board that advises the commission on blindness issues, I'd just like to know, why is the blind person always the one to get the hacks?
Yeah, well,
Brian.
Yep. Thank you for your question. I certainly there were several seats occupied both by people who are blind and people who are sighted, that were part of the right sizing or potential right sizing of the State Rehabilitation Council. My understanding too is that this was something that was also understood by the state committee itself at the same time that you're absolutely right, Harold, and we have every intent to consider the seat for a business enterprise person in our business industry and labor committee, or one of the four seats. So yeah, absolutely, that there's no question that's under consideration. The appointments process on the State Rehabilitation Council is changing a little bit. And, you know, in the same spirit of putting the destiny into the hands of the State Committee of Blind Vendors, the State Rehab Council itself now will have a subcommittee for appointments to make recommendations for the people who will be serving on the council. So here's another example, too, of putting that back into the destiny, back into the hands of the body itself. Now, the governor's office has been very clear, very explicit, and we applaud this. And we have to and need to maintain not just the majority of blind people on the State Rehabilitation Council as per federal law, but we have to maintain diversity. And our State Rehabilitation Council right now is anything but diverse. Racially diverse, no. Ethnically diverse, no. Geographically diverse, well, we're getting there. We're doing better that way than we were before. But at this point, and we applaud this, that the governor's office is not really going to entertain any more submissions for people who are not fitting the bill of making a state rehabilitation council that's diverse. So I think we're heading in some very good positive directions as well. And quite frankly, that we were maintaining for quite a while several people on our state rehabilitation council who were inactive. And that, of course, is always a drain on resources. And I know those who are sitting here in this room, and there are several who serve or who have served on this on that State Rehabilitation Council, would recognize that truth as well.
Thank you. Shelley? Elaine will be next, Mike.
Thanks for the mic, Mike. Good afternoon, Brian.
Hi, Shelley.
When you first came in today, we were having a discussion with the agencies, and Bob Barbera brought up an awesome point as far as mentoring, and of course our children are our most important resource. However, I'd like to ask about mentoring as a whole, overall. I'd like to see the commission do some more mentoring in other areas. Wilbur Webb had discussed doing some technology training assisting elderly folks who don't have vocational goals and getting some computer training. We've got some very savvy people out there that are elderly that can be quite a resource to their counterparts who may not have the funds for this type of mentoring. We don't look at single blind parents who are raising children by themselves, be it mothers or fathers, being mentored by other blind parents to give them that encouragement to do what pretty much, you know, many, many people, probably about 60 or 70% of people are doing now and raising children with single parent homes or a blended family or things of that nature. So where is the commission's accountability as far as our initiatives going with respect to those things? And one other quick question is, you're training folks in technology areas, but you're not offering them as far as with adaptive training. I know of a couple of people that have been trained as adaptive technology specialists, but the commission doesn't do a lot of outsourcing with those folks. Why are you putting $10,000 worth of training into these people and not giving them opportunities to get employment? Thank you.
Well, first I look up and I see another friend out there, Bob Barbera. So Bob, as you all know, he is our children's consultant in Buffalo, a valuable asset to the western region of New York, and certainly a valuable asset to CBVH. It's good to see you here, Bob. Thank you for your questions, Shelley. First, mentoring is something very much that CBVH values, and I'm very pleased to be looking at the back of the room once again and seeing Peter Crowley, who shares with me that real desire for mentoring. And, in terms of quality assurance, that's something that's very important to CBVH. And we recently we're in the very final stages of a monitoring exercise with the RSA, our federal funders. And one of the decisions in working with them that we made and that we agree on is that we need to shore up our quality assurance program at CBVH. And in recognizing that, we have received a substantial grant from the RSA for technical assistance so that in a year from now, our quality assurance program will be more comprehensive. Now, I think the examples of those individuals going through our ATC, our Adaptive Technology Centers, and our training, the failures are very far and in between. They do happen. There are various reasons that they happen. But I also think that we have a lot of successes in the investments that we make that return to society, if you will, manyfold. But we have also recognized that we need to continue the quality assurance effort far beyond our comprehensive services contracts, you know, our core service contracts with our private agencies, but that we need to do QA with our ATCs as well so that we can assure quality outcomes. So beginning this past summer, and we've completed it already, we went to each and every one of our ATCs for the first time to do a review of the quality of services. And there were many that were very high quality, and some for which we recommended some improvements. We expect that through the continuation of the increase in our efforts in QA, we will be able to reach the next sphere, if you will, the next step, so that the cases that you're talking about that are few and far between today will be not just rare, but will be non-existent, hopefully, in the future.
Segue. I hadn't planned to say. I had planned to kind of referee this, but doggone it, Peter, you got to do it to me. Every time they call, I feel like Michael here. Every time I want to retire, they call me back into action. You talked about the quality assurance. You talked about the mentoring components here. Let me take one at a time. I think to the extent that we still have the same old figure that you talked about this morning, you said you're sick and tired of hearing about it, and so am I, of the 70% unemployment rate. RSA is hardly the one to be holding us to a standard. RSA is just as guilty of tolerating that for 50 years as we are. Yeah. RSA ought to be ashamed of itself for monitoring. Who the heck they'd be monitoring? I would submit there has to be another way to create this monitoring. I'm not sure what it is yet, but you're not going to find it by doing it in-house. I would suggest to you there are some ways that we could think about outside of house or bring in new thoughts and opening up new windows to get some fresh air into this system that is just breathing on itself.
But we have not yet begun the process of the TA, and though it's still unknown in the future, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the generalities that you're talking in do become realities in the end, because if you look out in the trends and the ways of quality assurance out there, I think, and admittedly, we all know that CBVH needs to get more in line with those trends, and I think that those trends are what you're alluding to, and I think we're going to make it there through this year of technical assistance. I would think and hope that this is going to be an investment on the RSA's part that will pay dividends in our system.
Yeah, they might. I hope so. I'm there with that. I would challenge the new executive board when it sits to look at that figure again, and hopefully they can look at the figure of the 70% unemployment rate and reviewing all the programs, public and private, for blind people in the state, and maybe they'll come up with something new, because I know the current system, and this is not beating up on any one person at CBVH. The system through many commissioners hasn't. It's a system that rolls back, many commissioners before you, and it's many RSAs before the current, whatever the head of RSA is called nowadays. It rolls back for a long time. Mm-hmm. So this is not to be laid at any one person's foot, but a system that we're all mired in. Two other comments, and like I said, Peter brought them up to me. Yeah, Peter.
I'm mentoring, if it wasn't clear, we are going to roll out the proposal to the executive board. If the executive board feels strongly that this is a good model, but they would like it farmed outside of CBVH through an existing provider or a different provider that isn't actively participating, we are here to work with those with ideas.
You're talking about the executive board now?
Absolutely.
Yes, because I would remind CBVH, and I will remind the executive board, that the business just does not belong to the 17 existing agencies. The business belongs to the citizens of New York, and there are more than 17 entities that could answer an RFP.
What I was alluding to.
I think mentoring is done a lot better by none of those 17, and it's been shown that if you're going to try a new system, stop using the old one. It's not working, guys. Now, I guess the other thing that I want to do in reference to what Bob had brought up, and I know Mindy followed it up, to the comment to the private agencies, because I do want to hold their feet to the fire, but I'd also like to hold the state agency to the fire. Correct me, I figures if they're wrong, gentlemen. Either one of you is welcome to do that, because occasionally I do make a mistake, but I try not to admit to it. Is that if we took Peter Crowley out of the equation, the highest-ranking blind person at CBVH is a grade 22 senior counselor, one step above the field. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I think CBVH needs to be a little more proactive about getting blind people around the senior management table where the decisions are really made and not just carried out by blind guys doing the bidding of the sighted guys at the top of the agency. Mm-hmm. So before we start holding private agencies' feet to the fire and beating them up too, I think we need to hold our state agency just as accountable as we plan to hold our private agencies. Takes neither of you off the hook. Mm-hmm. Hold on, Bamrick. You had a bite at the apple. I do want to make sure we get everybody. Elaine had called for the floor.
You have people that you have trained, that the Commission for the Blind has paid excessive money to have trained, and those people are being told, well, if you can find places, you're a vendor for CBVH, but we don't necessarily outsource. We have ATC people. You've invested money into these people. They have an employment avocation. You're not being allowed to explore that vocation. What's the deal?
Can you rephrase that question in a different way? Then I'm not quite sure that
I want to
really
be fair to
Brian.
I don't understand the question either.
Okay, question is: you give somebody. Someone comes to a commission counselor in your state. They say, I want to be adaptive technology specialist, and I want to be outsourced by the commission to teach. That person goes through the training process. $10,000 is spent on that person. Then they're told by their counselors, well, we don't often outsource. We use our own people. But then they've been approved by the commission, but then they're not being hired, and they're, you know.
Okay, I understand. All right.
Yeah.
I'm a hypothetical, Brian. I'm a private vendor. I've got the skills that are possessed by your ATCs. Your ATCs are apparently doing whatever they're doing. Client X over there would like to hire me or Adaptive Technology Centers. A client would like to also employ my services, but my name is not being made available to the clients, if I understand that question right. So
yeah,
I'm a private vendor.
That's how I heard it, too.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Is there a way you can make private vendors available in the terms of making free choice available to the client so I can go to Aurora, or I can go to Carl Jacobson, I can go to Helen Keller, or I can go to Mike Robinson for my training?
Yeah, absolutely. I that's very clear to me, and I have to say that I don't know what to say because, first of all, I don't know in which cases you're talking about. I'm not saying that those don't exist. I have to say that I'm not aware of that. But absolutely, I mean, what we do in terms of our private vendors is that anybody who has the qualifications to be a private vendor is assessed for those qualifications. And if they meet the qualifications and, in some cases, a background check, then they're put into our cadre of private vendors. So, you know, on a case-by-case basis, I'd have to look at it.
Yeah, Shelly, will you get Brian will probably head for the back of the room when we release him from here. Would you let's deal with specific cases in the back of the room later, okay? I think it probably does refer to, you know, your ability to make all choices available to clients in a given office. Mm-hmm. You know, here's your options, these are the people who can do the job, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Mm-hmm. Take a choice.
Yep.
All right. Elaine?
Good afternoon.
Hi, Elaine.
We had a talk after you spoke last year at the convention mm-hmm. in Syracuse about keeping my case open.
Mm-hmm.
But I am very concerned still about the quality of service from your department in the southern tier of New York State. And I am really concerned about the people skills of counselors. In my case, I'm still unemployed, but I am still a taxpayer in New York State, helping to pay your salary and the salary of the counselors. I had a meeting several months ago where my counselor brought a senior counselor with him. And in the course of the discussion, I was told, you're NFB, you need to be more independent. I also have a woman who I'm friendly with. She's not in the NFB for a variety of reasons. She has had training through the commission, computer training for a year. She is still unemployed after having 62 interviews as of 3 weeks ago. And the counselor said to her, why aren't you employed? Basically, you have a bad attitude and you need training. I don't think that we need to accept this kind of attitude from your counselors. Number one, I am still unemployed after trying and working with a variety of counselors from your department for 7 years. I'm not getting younger, and until my dying day, I still want to work 20 hours a week.
Well, I appreciate those comments, and I'm very sorry to hear your perception that of what our staff has said to you. That type of thing is not acceptable at CBVH, and obviously there's an individual case here now that I would like to continue, you know, probably not here right now, but I'd like to continue certainly to talk to you about that and to get more specifics, because those around here who work at CBVH, those who are not around here who work at CBVH, most, that's not the attitude of most, and I want to know about that. Again, that is not acceptable.
Elaine, and then I want to follow up with Brian, then I'll get you, Neville. Elaine, you wanted to say something?
No, we'll talk later.
Okay.
Thank you.
Brian, Elaine told me of this comment a couple of days ago, And she made it publicly, so I guess I do need to just ask you. I don't expect a response from you right now, but I do want to request that you follow it up. The attitude by staff, and I don't, you know, we can follow this up to verify it, that because Elaine is a member of the National Federation of the Blind, that she is in less need of service than somebody else, seems to me to say that there is some kind of bias that is existing in the agency. Now, I know that I have not made a lot of friends over the years in the blindness community here, and that's as I expected. It's not, you know, I wasn't running for a popularity contest at CBVH or at the private agencies. I was running for a contest to please and serve my brothers and sisters in this room. And as long as they ask me to speak for them, I might annoy some people elsewhere. However, having said that, it seems it doesn't seem consistent with the neutral policy of a state agency to have a prejudice that Elaine is describing. I don't know that it's true. I don't know that it's not. But I'd like to challenge you to see if you can neutralize the likes and dislikes of either consumer organization within the state agency and find out the counselors ought to be getting blind people, whoever they happen to be and whatever their organizational affiliation is, back to work.
Yeah, and now I certainly agree, and I have to say that I don't share the feelings of anybody who may have said anything like that. And certainly as the head of the agency, I like to model certain things, and I'm sorry that that model didn't work or may not have worked on any individuals. Obviously, some of that is beyond my control, but it's certainly not the way that I feel. It's certainly not the way Peter Crowley feels. It's not certainly not the way the senior management team feels at CBVH and the vast, vast majority of us. I don't think that. If you want to say, I don't know what to say in terms of answer, in terms of bias in the agency. The agency itself and our philosophy is not one towards bias. If there's any bias in the agency, I regret that, and it's on a very rare and individual basis.
Okay, I guess all I'd ask you to do is say, I'll talk to Elaine and look into it.
Absolutely.
Fine. Neville?
Yes.
One second.
I have been in the BEP program now about since 1992, and I have met only two members of the commission who I think exemplify what the BEP should represent to both the blind community and to the sighted community. And those are Tom Robertson and Peter Crowley. And what I'm looking for is enthusiasm, because I recently, in fact, over the last 2 or 3 years, have been working with blind students in the vending program. And I've had to be whipping them up in terms of getting enthusiasm going. And I'm saying, how on earth are these young people going to be successful if they don't come out bubbling out of the school with enthusiasm? Are we training? Are we looking for people, hiring people who are enthusiastic about what they're doing? I think that's fundamental to the job. And if you're blind, I think it's extremely important that the people you hire be extremely enthusiastic about what they do. That should be a qualification.
I'm waiting for questions rather than rhetorical statements. Hold on. Neville, did you want Brian to respond to that? Okay.
Yes. Neville, what you're talking about is staff that we're hiring in the BEP program in particular?
Well, it's for the whole system, because if this scenario where you can't get a counselor who's enthusiastic enough to assist her, I mean, that becomes a real problem. The problem seems to be systemic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lack of enthusiasm about what you're doing.
Well, I have to say, I truly, truly believe, and I know Tom Robertson, if he were here, would say the same thing, because he started it as well. And I think that there's a lot of enthusiasm among our staff. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm at different levels. But, you know, Tom and I always noted, too, a particular enthusiasm in some of the younger staff that we're continuing to bring in. And I think Peter would certainly agree in terms of within the BEP program and the course that he is seeking, along with the State Committee of Blind Vendors, that I think that we will continue to see those hires in CBVH and BEP and in all areas with more enthusiasm, even more, I should say, than we have now. And again, I think Peter is a good example there of doing that and looking for that and succeeding.
I'm running a little. I'm starting to run a little late, folks. I will take. Okay, I heard Carrico, I heard Garcia, is that right? Okay, I got Carrico, Garcia, and Glenn. I guess you're going to, what? Great, all right. That is four, that's it. It's Carrico, Garcia, Stewart, and Eckhart.
And then Daniels?
Oh, Sorry?
And then Daniels.
Oh, Daniels gets the
closing statement. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
They have their questions to you. Yeah, Dan.
Okay.
You'll get the closing statement. These are the questions directed to you or us.
Yes, thank you.
One of the things it seems like we're all speaking to, but nobody said it directly, is the fact that the commission has been very, very good at providing training, at least the essence of training for many, many people. Have you considered, and what is being done to, because your counselors, frankly, because of their caseloads and various other kinds of things, have no choice but to kind of fill out forms and help people get to the facilities that they need to get to. What is being done to change, make that jump between the end of training and the actual employment in new jobs? I think somebody needs to be hired who does only that, seeks out new jobs for blind people, and actively works toward changing the attitudes of not just corporations, but other companies as well. Have you considered it? And if so, what is being done?
Yeah, I really appreciate you asking that question. But it also seemed to me that you implied at some point, too, and if you did, I'd like to address that as well. Were you implying, too, that our counselors have become too bureaucratic and that has
Absolutely.
Harmed the process? Okay. Well, first of all, I really appreciate your question because I can tell you with real sincerity, and at this point it's too premature to go into details, but the answer is yes, we're absolutely considering it. We're absolutely considering it on a pilot basis. We're absolutely considering it upstate. We're absolutely considering it downstate, and we're having a meeting next week about it. And that's the truth. Now, in terms of our counselors being, as some people call them, paper pushers, yes, we admit that we have become that. And when you admit something like that, it's not an easy thing. And when you admit that you have digressed a little bit because the system itself has pressured you to become more paper-oriented, you'll come to the conclusion that you have to do something about it. So what we have done is we have invested, and I consider this to be a low, good estimate given what I'm looking at around the country that other states are investing, but we have put in $700,000 to a state-of-the-art case management system that is going to eliminate the need for paper, eliminate some of the onerous communication that we have between us and the private agencies, also that we can give our supervisors stronger tools to use as supervisors, and our counselors literally will no longer be buried under paper because paper won't exist in that system anymore, which will be very much computer oriented and very quick and fast. And I am certain beyond a shadow of a doubt that that's going to continue into positive outcomes, employment outcomes. So we will continue now, because in the last 2 years, CBVH, for the first time in two consecutive years, including the federal fiscal year that just ended, has increased our employment numbers for the first time, two consecutive years, for the first time since the late 1990s.
Brian,
I think we're going to only get better with this new system.
Is it? I'd like to assume, but tell me if I'm wrong, this new case management system is accessible to screen readers and other kinds of adaptive technology that your blind staff might be using, too, is it not?
Oh, of course. In
okay.
fact, they're...
Of course, Pennsylvania, Texas, you know, it happens in state agencies. We do forget about those things, and OGS might have just, flipped it in there.
Sometimes it's okay to be a little over-bureaucratic sometimes, and I think in this case, with the depth that we're looking and asking our staff questions and involving them in work groups, I think in the end is going to pay dividends because we're going to have every single angle that we can in the entire commission, and definitely including for those who need accessibility in the system, it'll be there, absolutely. And this system already is in place in other parts of the country, and we're hearing good reports for that.
Okay, I'm squishing the agenda. I can hear the squeaks at the side of it. Garcia? You need a mic right now. You couldn't yell at me if I stepped on your foot. Go, Maria.
We recently moved from Paul Gerasi's case.
Yeah. Keep the mic in your mouth.
Okay.
Wait. We're not hearing you. I'll let you know when I hear you.
It's not me. It's Mike.
Mike, fix the mic, please.
Okay, now it is. You have a pre-vocational counselor to decrease some of that caseload. Now, I got a packet of information from Ed.
Okay, let me repeat that, Maria, because you're not coming over the head. Maria says she just got a packet of information for Laura, her daughter, from the commission that included a pamphlet from ACB, but nothing from NFB, nothing from POBC.
Oh yeah,
Maria wanted to ask if the commission would add the NFB literature along with ACB's literature that they're sending out.
Absolutely. Let me ask you a quick question. Have you ever given it to us before?
And you had more of NFB literature than you knew what to do with. You were criticized for handing out our information and not theirs. Pendulum.
I was just going to say that when we got you, we absolutely got the reverse criticism a few years ago, and when I looked into it, what I discovered was we ran out of what we had. So that might be what the issue is here. We will look into it.
Is there income eligibility required for children's services in CBVH?
Well, these are what we're talking about is no longer children's services. We're talking now transition services. Yes. It's a very good question, and I'm sorry that you were unarmed with this information. Ed Goldberg, to whom you refer, is one of four counselors who came to us through a grant from VESID. And VESID wanted us to try unique things in transition. Now, what's not understood and what people falsely think is that transition by federal requirement can't begin until the age of 14, but that's not the truth of the matter. Because, in fact, VESID doesn't begin until the senior year of high school. So we've always had the luxury of starting at the age 14. But we've also noticed, too, and believe, and we know the studies and what everybody says, that starting transition, the earlier you start it, the more successful our youth may be as adults. So this is a pilot experimental program with a grant from VESID to allow us to begin as early as age 10. So that's exactly what this is. Now, I doubt through transition itself there's going to be any issues of income eligibility. But rather, because this is considered to be VR, and because the services are going to be federally funded, they're under the VR types of policies. And this is kind of routine in terms of what we, the information that we seek. But in terms of income eligibility being an issue with any services for transition age kids, no way, I don't see that. Yes.
All right, I'm just hoping that Maria's daughter, as well as many other children around this state, and for that matter other clients, but especially our children, are not going to be penalized because their moms and dads are stupid enough to go to work on a Monday morning.
That's what I was trying to say a little differently, yeah.
Okay. There you go. We'll get to it. Can I get to do these two questions quickly? I had Stuart. Yeah. Carl has the floor. Oh, you pass, Glenn. All right, Craig.
I'll try to go as quick as I can. Is it working?
Cool. Okay. Hi. I was concerned about the qualifications new clients have to meet in order to get services, specifically the process of doing evaluations. In my case, I came to the city last spring after getting through school in Florida, and in my case, I've been around the country to several schools, and I've also had previous employment as an O&M instructor in several schools. So when I got to the city, I met with the counselor, and he said, okay, in order for you to receive services, we're going to have you go through a couple evaluations, you know, one as an O&M evaluation to make sure that you can safely and independently get around the city, and, you know, another one that says that you can, you know, handle your own life skills and, you know, that kind of thing. And in my head, I'm like, well, doesn't that suffice in my resume? Because I have, you know, references and all sorts of stuff that you could check on to see that what I wrote down is valid. So what I'm getting at is not to necessarily put everyone who comes to the commission in the same mold of, you know, okay, you have to automatically assume that they, you know, you're a blind person, so you might not have good travel skills. Well, that's true for a lot of people. It's not necessarily the case. And I think that it'd be a good idea to maybe reform that process to make it more individualized, I guess. Make it based on what the person has actually done as opposed to just assuming, you know, they need these evaluations automatically.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Brian, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, okay. That was it. That was just a request. This was
a suggestion.
That was easy.
Yes. Okay.
Brian, let me give you a chance to wrap up, and let me give you, and let me do that partially by saying, we don't always agree with the commission. I do appreciate you being here today, getting an opportunity to interact with the people from around the state about services that directly affect sometimes their lives and the lives of our children and the future of blind people in this state. Things I say about the commission are not always popular. Some of the things that you're saying were tried years ago and worked years ago and then were abandoned in the mid-time. The reducing ages and noticing that outcomes, the younger we get, the better the outcomes. We discovered that in 1996 and 1997 when we began collaborative programs with CBVH to provide mentoring to teenagers. It became successful. It became a model program in other parts of the state. RSA wrote it up and exported it around the country as a great idea. And we all thought it was a great idea at the time, and I still think it was a great idea at the time. Where it fell short is when the private agencies decided because they can see they can do better. And CBVH gave over the major responsibility for that to private agencies. It's currently just, you know, doing it's another one of many programs now. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see the quality there. That's a statement. I don't expect, you know, that anything changes tomorrow about this. It's just an observation that over 10 years these things do happen. Mm-hmm. So when to say that we're going to the younger we get, we're going to study to see if we can reduce the transition stuff. We know that already. We know that it works. We know that the younger we get, and if we can get the parents of infants, it works well too. The best experience that we had over this weekend is some parents of some very young children simply sitting here. We don't even have to talk about their kids. If they see that blind guys are no different than any other people in the world, it means the world for the future of their sons and daughters, just to see that, yes, life is not over because they're blind. So if we can get parents of blind children when their children are 1, 2, and 3 years old, it will work. The earlier you have contact with a blind person or a blind person's family, the better your results are going to be. This is not something that needs a master's in rehabilitation counseling to study. Every blind person in this room knows it. And having said all that, I guess I would still thank you for being with us, and I will still remain the critic of the commission when I think the commission needs to be criticized. And when you need to be praised, I will praise you too. I think it was a very good decision on your part to hire Peter Crowley. Thank you, sir. Brian, I want to give you the last word.
Yes,
no, I don't want to give you the last word, but I want to give you a chance to say something, whatever you choose.
Yes, I appreciate that, Carl. And you know, in such a good way, I feel you just lobbed me a real softball, because you're really giving me an opportunity with that statement to come full circle in my speaking to you today. I started by saying that it's been a while since I had an opportunity to dialogue with the NFB, particularly with the New York State affiliate, and I want to thank you so much for inviting me here. And, you know, I said it's been a while since we've dialogued, and it's also been a while since you and I have dialogued as well, Carl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we, you know, among our very last conversations, we talked about our shared feelings for mentoring, and we talked about opportunities that the NFB and CBVH would have to collaborate and to cooperate exactly in that way. And though the communications, you know, haven't been as much as in recent times as they have had in the past, I would be more than happy to pick that up again and to continue that conversation and other conversations so that we can take a look at it. And because, you know, I look around this room, Carl, and I say this to everybody else, and I see some of the best mentors that I can possibly see in the state of New York. You know, and I look around, and I'll be even-handed here too. I look around at ACB, and I see the same thing as well. Within our two leading consumer groups, we have some of the best mentors for our kids. So why would we not want to take the opportunity to avail ourselves of this, so that we can have all of you or many of you in this room touch the lives of the future generations of our kids? So, you know, there's no better reason to continue the dialogue than that, and I think certainly there are other good reasons, and certainly for me, I think that's a good last word for me to have here today.
I will follow that up by simply responding morning to you that it has been a long time. It's been since last state convention, except for an accidental meeting in a hall in Manhattan. Except for that, it's been since last state convention since we spoke. Prior to that, it was almost weekly. Having said that, I will tell you folks that it won't always be something that we will agree on, but since you have come halfway, Brian, I will go halfway, and I offer you my hand on that.
Thank you.
So, Brian, thank you very much for being with us.